Over the course of 8 years, Barack Obama has amassed an array of achievements as President of the United States. In his new book, Audacity, New York Magazine political columnist Jonathan Chait makes the provocative argument that most of Obama's achievements will not only survive a Trump administration, but also the judgment of history, which will proclaim that Obama was among the greatest and most effective presidents in American history, according to Chait. He digs deep into Obama's record on major policy fronts and explains why so many observers, from cynical journalists to disheartened Democrats, miss the enormous evidence of progress amidst the smokescreen of extremist propaganda and the confinement of short-term perspective. Jonathan Chait is a political columnist for New York Magazine. He was previously a senior editor at the New Republic, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. I enjoy your work very much, so it's very nice to have
you
here. What led you to want to really, in your mind, get the record straight?
Well, I spent Obama's presidency having the sense that people weren't getting the story right, that people, for various reasons, were missing the important things that were happening and focusing on things that were unimportant or wrong. So I wanted to make an argument about what Obama was doing, what he had done, and why we had missed how much he had done.
Why do you think we have missed as much as we have?
Yeah, there are a few reasons. One is an imbalance between the two sides of the partisan debate that seems to define the kind of two ends of the discussion, and that sort of frames the discussion, where you had the right that really just lost its marbles completely during the Obama era and opposed everything he did, in part because of a partisan calculation by Republican leaders that they would be most successful if they just opposed everything he did and avoid giving him any bipartisan cover, and in part because their base was just losing it in the Obama years. But it's also the case that liberals and the left spent much more time complaining about Obama than they did celebrating him. So it kind of seems to everyone like failure. And even to many Democrats, if you ask them about Obama, they might say, I like him, he stands for good things, but it's the Republicans' fault he didn't get much done. And I'm arguing in this book that that's wrong. He actually did get a lot done. Now, there's also just the news media, and the way the news media has covered this president, I think, has not really communicated the important things. Big, important changes he made were just completely ignored or given very short shrift, and attention constantly moved from crisis of the day to crisis of the day without really giving the right perspective on what was going to last and what was going to be important.
Do you think race played a role?
It absolutely played a role. It's my first chapter. It's significant to understand that the way Americans feel about race became much more tightly correlated with how they feel about politics. So almost every political question, from approval of Obama to approval of Obamacare to almost everything else, became racialized. And questions like asking people whether you think African Americans have it too easy or have it too hard, or whether they have enough or whether they have too much, those questions which measure how people feel about race in this country, those became the best way to see how they would think about Obama and think about any political question in the Obama era.
So, two-part question. I'm hoping that you can give us just a brief overview of what you think some of the major achievements are, and then speak to why you think those major achievements will survive a Trump administration.
Great question. I'll just do the big ones. Start with the economic recovery. The United States was headed into a Great Depression, a crisis just as severe as what happened in 1929, but never got as bad as it was in the Depression because Obama stopped it. He stopped it with the stimulus. He stopped it with the bank restructuring plan and then the auto bailout, which saved the Midwest from spiraling into complete disarray. And by definition, Trump obviously can't go back and bring back the 2008 financial crisis. Then you have climate change, which I think will probably be his greatest legacy. You had $90 billion in green energy investments in the stimulus. It happened really fast, passed within a few weeks, and didn't receive much attention, but it created a revolutionary change in the affordability and the availability of new technologies, especially solar and wind, which are a fraction of the cost they once were and spread very fast. And they leveraged those changes into making diplomatic agreements with China and then with the entire world with the first international climate change agreement. And I would argue that Trump is going to try to slow down that green energy revolution, but he's not going to stop it, because the technological change that was unleashed by that process under Obama is going to continue. Those new technologies, those green energy technologies, will continue to get more affordable. And other countries don't want to give up on the progress they made during this period. So even if the United States stops participating, I think the diplomatic momentum will continue. And then Obamacare is the other really huge Obama achievement. The goal was to slow down the rising cost of medical care, which had been rising faster than inflation for decades, and to create access to people who couldn't insure it. And it made enormous progress on both those things. Ironically, it did more to slow down, through its cost reforms, to slow down the growth of medical care. Now, medical inflation, healthcare inflation, is at its lowest level in 50 years. And coverage was partial. The coverage expansion was partial in large part because Republicans fought so bitterly to keep people from being able to get into this system wherever they had the power to do so. But you still had 20 million people gain coverage through this law. And I think the closer Republicans get to actually trying to repeal it as they promised, the more they're discovering how hard it is to repeal it, that people who are on it appreciate it. They want to be taken care of. Republicans have no good ideas for replacing it in any way that would be satisfactory to the people who are on it. So the Republicans are actually finding themselves stuck between this promise they've been making that they could destroy the law and replace it with something that's cheaper and better. It's just mathematically impossible, and the reality of what they face.
The president spoke yesterday at his final news conference and talked quite a bit about what he would be doing after office, and instead of just fading away, really gave a nuanced answer as to the types of things that would bring him back into the debate. You make the point in the book that being a young, popular former president, he's leaving with very high approval ratings, that he will still very much be a force.
It's right. It's really historically unique to have an ex-president who's extremely popular, who's young, who's not scandal-disgraced, who's not dead, and whose successor is actually trying to attack his policy agenda, especially because the successor is much less popular. Donald Trump is in the 30s in his favorable ratings, and Obama's the most popular politician in America. So this really puts Obama in a unique position. I think he's going to be judicious about the way he weighs into the debate to get maximal impact, but I don't think he's going to go away like George W. Bush did, or even like the way Bill Clinton did.
Do you think he will be a leader? Do you think he will be a leader of the opposition and a voice?
He won't be a leader of the opposition in the sense that when you open up the newspaper every day to see what the Democrats are saying about Trump, Obama's the one who's giving them a quote. And he won't be the one who's in the room with them every day coming up with strategy. But I think he'll have a major active role in revitalizing the Democratic Party. And like he said, So just to pull back for a moment, I think the way to think about what Trump is doing is not so much as a threat to erase Obama's legacy as a threat to erase the legacies of everyone who's been president since the founding of the United States of America. He's a threat to Republicanism, period. Small-R Republicanism, the democratic form of government. And I think what Obama is saying is if Trump goes over the line, if he tries to use authoritarian power to undermine the sanctity of American democracy, that's the kind of thing that Obama is likely to speak out on.
You make the point, and I think it's a fascinating one, that by understanding the true nature and scope of President Obama's record, you can then, that's the best way to protect it. And the best way to protect not only his programs, but as you mentioned, the programs of previous presidents and administrations.
That's exactly right. I think people keep asking what's going to happen to his policies, and I gave you predictions, but we can't be sure. The
right.
future is in motion. The future is what we make of it. And one of the things I hope this book does is explains to people what kind of change Obama was able to make and why that change is worth defending. And the better it's understood and appreciated, the better chance people will have of defending the successes that he was able to bring.
When you think, and this goes really back to the earlier question of that idea that there wasn't a great deal of success because of the great partisanship and the deadlock that we've seen in government. Let me just zoom out a little bit and ask you a diagnostic question about democracy as a whole. Mm-hmm. But aren't we in this for the long haul? I mean, even if Donald Trump hadn't been nominated or had been elected president and Hillary Clinton had, we still would have seen the same dynamic of having a huge gridlock. Is just this, I hate to be cynical in this, but is this the way it's going to be from now on? Or do you think that there is something that this jam up can be broken and go down the river at some point so we can actually move forward?
No, I think this is going to be the way it is going forward. And I do try to get into this a bit in the book. But we had a really unusual situation in the 20th century where you had two parties that didn't have very distinct views. You had the Republican Party, which was formed as a liberal party in the 19th century, had that tradition lasting for a long time and was moving to the right, but still had a really strong liberal wing, especially in the Northeast. And the Democratic Party, which had been the conservative party in the 19th century, developed a strong liberal wing in the 20th century, but still was this mix of right and left. So it was very normal for people on both sides to work together because the parties just didn't stand for very, very clear differences. And that's what people think is how government should work. But that's not how parties work in most countries. They're not expected to work together like that. And what we're moving toward and what we really are in is really more like the way it has been through longer, earlier periods of American history and how it works through most other countries in the rest of the world. And our system of government has to adapt itself to that reality, and unfortunately we haven't.
So help me and my Joe brain understand how you have a president who is leaving as the most popular president in modern times, being replaced by the most unpopular president in modern times, and how we got to that point and how we are supposed to make sense of that.
It's very bizarre, and I think people have not wrapped their minds around this, but I think the key dynamic was the incredible unpopularity of Hillary Clinton. That depressed the Democratic turnout, made a lot of people think she was terrible and wasn't worth supporting and not worth going out for. I think it energized Republicans, even ones who had reservations about Trump, were willing to vote for him because they thought Hillary Clinton was so evil. And I think some of this can be attributed to her own failings, her own mistakes. I think some of it can be attributed to the press and the way they covered her and hyped up, I think, the email scandal, which was sort of a second-tier scandal and made it seem like a gigantic crime. Of course, Russia with the WikiLeaks helped, and the FBI's extraordinary intervention helped as well. So a lot of things came together to allow the main thing that Trump did successfully was to beat up on Hillary Clinton as a crook. And that's what enabled him to get just over the finish line. But remember, he lost the national vote by more than 2%. So he is not and never has been popular. He just managed to be slightly less unpopular than Hillary Clinton in a few key states.
Jonathan Chait is the author of Audacity, How Barack Obama Defied His Critics and Created a Legacy That Will Prevail. He is also a wonderful political columnist for New York Magazine. Jonathan, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.